This is the Van Life Podcast, episode 170 for November 29th, 2020. I'm Daddy No Fun.
And this is also the Cafe Racer Podcast. Same number of episodes for also November 20th, 2020. I'm Crash. Nice little surprise.
I was going to see if you caught that. But
yeah, of course. Really quick, I just want to say this episode, as all the episodes so far, is sponsored by Discount Ramps. Go to discountramps.com for 15% off using the code CAFE if you want a ramp, a hitch carrier, any kind of thing. If you need to load something onto something else, you should check out discountramps.com.
Awesome products.
Yeah, I haven't gotten...
How do I not know what year it is? The most...
yeah, right?
Yeah, worst year of the millennium, and I don't remember what year. I was going to say 2021.
Yeah, which a couple episodes you said 20 ago, you said 2021, and I was like, sure, whatever, we could fast forward. This year sucks.
You might need to check me in someplace.
Yeah, maybe. One of these days.
So listen, I want to shout out to my girlfriend, Marcy. Today's her birthday.
Happy birthday, Marcy. I actually just texted her while you were doing the intro.
She's something... I'm not going to tell you how old she is. She's 29 and three quarters.
29 and three quarters. Okay.
She's 30. Later, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So how you been, man?
Good. Good. Had Thanksgiving and my friend came out with me. My friend Ashley came out cause she was going to be alone for Thanksgiving. And, I was like, hey, you know, do you want to come out for my Thanksgiving at my parents' house or whatever? And so she came out, which was super fun. Like my son just pretended she didn't exist the whole time because he was feeling really shy. So he literally didn't say a single word to her. Every now and then she would catch him like kind of like side eye looking at her like, who are you?
Right.
But like the rest of the time, like the most she ever got out of him was kind of like a squeak when she like startled him at one point. My daughter talked to her a couple of times, but then she would kind of alternate between feeling shy and then like wanting to talk.
Right.
But the most important part was my parents talked to her, which meant that some of their attention was away from me. So normally they're like not intentionally grilling me, but like asking me just a million questions about what's been going on. And I don't really often have much to say. And so I'm just like, I don't know. Like, you know, like they're not trying to like, you know, hold the lamp over my head and be like, what were you doing on Saturday the 27th? And I'm just like, I don't know. So they got, you know, they had someone else to talk to about stuff, which was cool.
So a funny side note on that, I had two Thanksgivings, which I love turkey, you know, like, and my sons, we went to the hunt camp. We have a hunting lease in Central Florida. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's always kind of been for years, either we were there for Thanksgiving or at home, and they were like, well, my oldest son had to be back on Thanksgiving Day because he was on duty the next day. And, you know, people were kind of leaving. So we wanted to do it on Wednesday. And they were like, yeah, we're just going to have like, we'll have leftovers. I'm like, no, negative. We're having a turkey. You're not having Thanksgiving without a turkey. So I was going to fry one. I was going to go buy a fryer and fry it. I ended up just going to the Honey Baked Ham company, and they had sliced turkey. They had a whole turkey already cooked, but she's like, it's got to go in the oven for like an hour and a half to warm it up.
Yeah.
We only have grills out there. So she's like, if you really want to do it on a grill, get the sliced turkey breasts. They're fully cooked. You just throw them on for like 10 minutes to heat them up in some foil. They were fantastic. Got a roasted one, a smoked one. Yeah. So it was good. But the funny side note was... crap, man. What were you just talking about a second ago? I was going to bring it up. Oh, well, I know what it is. Yeah, okay. Your parents grilling you.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what happens when you get old. So I gave my brother-in-law's, he had to leave on Wednesday to take care of some family business, and he left his 17-year-old son out of the hunt camp to hunt. And he says, hey, can you bring Jackson home? on Thursday. You're coming home Thursday, right? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, we'll stay for Thanksgiving Thursday too. I'm like, okay. So we're driving home and I'm talking to Jackson and he's talking about this thing called Life 360. You ever heard of this?
That sounds sort of familiar.
Apparently it's like a tracking app too, kind of like a little bit more sophisticated than like Find My Friends on an iPhone.
Uh-huh.
It can like tell you how fast your kid's moving.
Oh, so yeah, I have heard of this. With
somebody else, it'll tell you the car is doing 75 miles an hour. So he's like, it's like, oh, my friend's parents have this and we can't go anywhere. And they know, they're calling him and going, why is the car going 62 miles an hour in a 40? You know, or like, where are you? And it's just, it's like nonstop grilling, you know, it's.
Yeah.
I think I would have lost my mind had that existed when I was a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so. I have used something, a much less feature filled version of this. I just looked it up. I'm not putting this in the show notes because if you want it, find it yourself. I'm not going to contribute it to this, but I used something similar once, with my stepdaughters because we were, like not sure where their dad was taking them. You know, like, because we didn't trust him. You know, but
I get that. Yeah.
But yeah, like I can't imagine wanting to put that on my kid's phone. Like if my, you know, whenever my kids have a phone and then wanting to like know that much, like they need to be on their own.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to know you were at a brothel last night. You know what I mean? Like,
but what is a 12-year-old doing in a brothel anyway? Oh my goodness. But yeah, that's a lot. That's a bit of an invasion.
Tell me about it.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. All right. So you got a new van, hence the Van Life Podcast intro.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this about the Van Life Podcast, but it was a bit of an adventure, and just to bring people up to speed, we've been talking about it for a while. I don't know if I talked about this on the last show, but. We initially put a deposit on one. We were supposed to take delivery in February of next year. And the dealership called and said, hey, we had somebody back out on a November delivery. They're all sold, you know, and accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Through now, if you were to order one, it's going to be 2022 before you get
one
from this particular manufacturer. So we were like, I talked to Marcia. I'm like, what do you want to do? And she's like, hell yeah, you know, let's go get it. So we kind of like, shifted plans around, you know, and got stuff together. And we flew the dealers in Greer, South Carolina, which is literally right next to the dealership was right next to the Greenville Spartanburg Airport, mm-hmm. South Carolina. They picked up the dealership. We did like, you know, a couple hour, like 3 hour walkthrough of all the systems. It was kind of, advantageous because the vice president of the manufacturer and one of their tech guys, we had just been there like the Friday before, 3 days before, to go over everything with the sales staff and the tech guys. So we actually went through the walkthrough with one of the service guys and it was great and was very thorough. We learned a lot, you know, and long story short, we packed up, we went for a campground. We lucked out because we had to be there by 6 o'clock and we were there at like 6:11 and have run into the ranger and he's like, hey, no problem, go take this spot, I'll catch you guys in the morning to register you. So he gave us a gate code, we went and got food, bedding. We literally had nothing. We just flew with two small bags with our toiletries and some clothes and camera gear, and that was it. And we didn't have anything else for the inside of the van, no pots and pans, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the second day, you know, we camped in that first Parris Mountain State Park in South Carolina, which was really beautiful. The next day, another state park. And then we had stopped on I can't remember the name of the road. It was a major highway in South Carolina going south that kind of like cuts into US 26, mm-hmm. I-26. We stopped at a rest stop and just something told me like, you got to stop, you got to go to the bathroom. You know, like, and I kind of veered off, pulled into this rest stop. And Marcy's like, well, I'm going to make lunch, you know, like let's use all the stuff. The whole intention of this was let's use as much crap as we can inside this thing to make sure everything works.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So she's making hamburger helper in the van. I come back, we eat, we're having a good time. We go to leave. She starts driving. She backs out of the spot, puts it in drive, and all of a sudden, bang, 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 bang.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that didn't sound good. Stop. Pull over immediately. Yeah. So we get out. I pop the hood. First, we thought we ran over something.
Yeah.
You know, looked underneath. There's nothing, no damage. Pop the hood. And the fan for the radiator is literally sticking through the fan shroud. Like, it looked like the center of the fan had disintegrated.
Yeah.
And it shot it up through the shroud. And I'm like, this isn't good.
Mm-mm.
My first thought was, I can probably pry this shroud open and get the fan out, and then we can drive it. But then I'm thinking, this thing's brand new. You know, it's a 2021. I don't want to risk anything. Let me go call Mercedes-Benz. So I pushed, there's a button inside. I pushed the button. It calls,
the black helicopter button.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the whole, this was like 1:30 in the afternoon. Mercedes-Benz's third party they use for roadside service is a company called Urgently, and they are horrible.
Okay.
Four different towing companies were involved in this. Ugh. And then they finally sent one. And the guy shows up with like, and I kept telling these people, you know, when they would call me, I'm like, look, it's a 10,000 pound vehicle. It's 20 feet long, 10 feet high. And you got to take two of us to the dealership. And the dealership was in Charlotte, North Carolina, like 95 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, one company, the first guy that called, he said he'd be there in 90 minutes. 3 hours later, I call him. He's like, they canceled me like 2 hours ago. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, they couldn't agree on my price. He goes, I got the equipment and everything. And then another company that they said was going to come, I called them like, we don't have an order from Mercedes-Benz. We don't know what you're talking about. And then the third guy that calls me is like, when I told him the size of the van, he's like, I'll call you back. I never heard from him again. Finally, the fourth company that shows up, it's like 6:30 at night now. This mm-hmm. fourth company shows up and the guy's got a bumper tow wrecker, right? And Marcy's immediately freaking out. She's like, you can't tow with that. It's got to go on a flatbed. You know, it's a four-wheel drive, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, well, I'm going to put it on dollies. And she's like, no, I don't think you can do that. She ends up calling a dealership in California and talks to like the head of their service. And the guy's like, no, it's got to be on a flatbed. You can't bumper tow it. You can't disconnect the drive shafts, you know, all this stuff. So the guy's like, all right, fine. We'll get you a flatbed. It'll be here in an hour. So the flatbed guy shows up and he's pretty savvy, you know, like he's a heavy recovery wrecker guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look, he's measuring everything. And he's like, we're going to be at the limit for being legal. If I put it on my flatbed, we're almost over 14 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little precarious like that. He goes, if I take it on the other wrecker and we put it on dollies, it's no different than flatbedding it. It's off the ground completely. So we kind of kick it back and forth and we decide, all right, we'll let him do that. We'll let him put it on the dolly. They jack the thing up. They put the dollies underneath the rear wheels and one of the dolly tires pops.
Good Lord.
So now they're done with the dolly, right? So now they load this thing on the flatbed and it is humongous because the van's four-wheel drive. It's like lifted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, this thing is huge. Well, I got to tell you, this guy, man, what a great job. It started with him going to the gas station and to pump diesel in his truck before we left.
Mm-hmm.
I see him get an empty water bottle out, like just dry, and he pumps diesel fuel in it. And he's like looking at it, holding up to the light, lifting it and stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of went, what was that all about? He goes, we've had a problem with four or five of our trucks from this particular company with bad gas. I'm checking the gas. Well, turns out this guy's a diesel mechanic too, besides the wrecker driver. But you know, it was 35 miles an hour on back roads, having to stop at every intersection where there were lights hanging down to make sure we'd clear every bridge. By the time we got to the dealership, it's 12:30 at night.
Mm-hmm.
So we like set up home in the van, cooked food, slept in there. Next morning, got out, talked to the service guy. You know, he was like really worried that it was going to be something that the manufacturer of the RV did. He goes, look, there's a second alternator installed. We need to know what parts that they used, how it was done, because they would have had to have taken the fan off. And he goes, there's a good possibility Mercedes-Benz isn't going to warranty this. Well, I had called the manufacturer. They have an app where you can set an appointment up and immediately talk to them. And they're like, don't worry about it. No matter what it is, we'll cover it. If it's something we did, we'll take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to get a hotel that night. They kept it. And we went out to dinner and we got a call from the dealership at dinner. And the guy's like, good news, Mercedes-Benz is going to cover it. It's nothing that the manufacturer did. They sent us all their parts lists and what their procedure was. We're covering it through Mercedes. I'm like, okay, great. Well, that the vice president of the company that makes the van, Storyteller Overland, calls us mm-hmm. at the hotel. Like, hey, do you guys need anything? Are you all right? How's everything going? You know, like what other OEM yeah. is going to do that? You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't believe it. And I had a conversation with him for a while. You know, we just want to make sure you guys are all right. If you need anything, no, we're fine. We're good. We had a good time. It was fun. We found a kick-ass restaurant in Charlotte that if you're in Charlotte or around Charlotte, there's a place called Roosters. You got to check it out. It was fantastic. But yeah, then we hit the road and did the rest of the trip and had a blast. And it got me thinking a lot when we were on the trip about like one, what kind of motorcycles I'm going to put on this thing or where they're going to go mm-hmm. or whether I'm still thinking the e-bike route because of space and weight.
Yeah.
There's a 500 pound limit on the tongue weight. I think we talked about that before. So I think two small bikes, like two of the 125s would work.
Yeah. You'd be like right at the limit, I think.
I think it would be. Yeah. Cause they're a little over 200 something pounds, like 235, I think, or that's without fuel maybe. But anyway, e-bikes are another good possibility. But yeah. besides that, I also started thinking about little stuff. And that got me thinking about, hey, Christmas is coming up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about gifts, you know?
Yeah, for sure. When you mentioned this the other day, I was like, oh, that's a great idea. We can talk about some little gift ideas. Obviously, heated hand grips and things are always like a good bet for people that ride in chillier weather. So that's my first pick for a gift is some heated hand
grips.
There's
a lot of generic ones out there, right? So yeah. You don't necessarily have to have a plug and play system.
Yeah. I mean, the ones that I had on the Bonneville were done by a company, or they're made by a company called Coso. They have the button that regulates the temperature built into the left grip. So mm-hmm. They're relatively inexpensive in the grand scheme of things. And they have, you know, they're fully integrated, so you don't have to put some kind of switch somewhere or mount it on your handlebars or whatever.
Those actual grips?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or are they a wrap?
No, they completely take the grip off your bike and put new grips on.
Yeah, these are cool. I'm checking these out now.
Yeah, yeah. They're one of those, you know, they got like five levels or whatever, you know, and there's a little, there's a little like RGB LED in the button so that when you click it, it turns green, blue, yellow, whatever, you know, whatever level you're setting it to. And they have a feature built into the grip it's supposed to help keep your, if you have them wired directly to your battery, for example, which I did, without being switched, you know, with your ignition, mm-hmm. then they have a feature that's designed to prevent them from running your battery all the way dead. Like they detect your battery voltage, and if your battery voltage gets below a certain level, they shut off automatically.
Wow, what's pretty cool is they actually have these that are like specific. So they've got them for Harley Davidson, Honda Grom, Honda Monkey.
Yeah, they're probably sized for the handlebar. Like, and I had them on 7/8 bars, but I'm sure they have them for, you know, inch bars, inch and a quarter bars, whatever.
Yeah, and some of them actually have an additional thing for like a rheostat, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a really good. I mean, these are far better than the wraparound ones.
Yeah, I like them a lot.
Your grips off first. Yeah, these are nice.
Yeah, and they're easy. So, you know, if you've ever taken grips off a motorcycle, it's this weird, like, if you have like an air compressor situation, you can kind of like puff up the grip and use it to like slide it off easily. But otherwise, you're like cutting it off or like stretching it, and it's all this weird thing. The Coso ones have a plastic, like hard plastic core. So mm-hmm. you just kind of like, you get it on there and you just tap it on with like a soft rubber mallet or like a wood block or something. You just slide them right on. They're super easy.
Man, they make a ton of them. This is cool.
Yeah, okay. They make gauges. They make grips. I've had a couple of their speedometers on my Bonneville back when I had it. So yeah,
I'm sure Coso we'll have heated grips.
That's my, yeah.
Coso is Koso. It's CosoNorthAmerica.com. Mm-hmm. Yep. They make some really great gauges and lights too. I like a lot of the stuff that they've done. I've seen a lot of their gauge packages. Matter of fact, we spent time talking to them at AM Expo, I remember, mm-hmm. one year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in that same vein of warm, cold weather, I'm recommending gloves. And I think gloves are a great gift all the time, because it's not like people use one. You can have gloves for different seasons. And I always go back to Lee Park's designs, because I just think that their product is so well made. They hold up so well. They're pricey, but man, they are nice. And they're deer skin and some elk, depending on the glove, but they hold up really well. So I have the deer tours with the outside seams. I'm real sensitive to seams in my hand, so these are like sewn on the outside. And retail price on them is about $95 for those. They have an insulated version of it that's about $149, and then they make something called the Deer Sports, which are the longer gauntlet type clubs, if you like those.
Mm-hmm.
And they run between $135 and $205, depending on what you get. But check out those if you want to. I always think gloves are a great gift. There's a lot of different manufacturers out there for gloves, and we can be pretty generic about it.
Yeah.
But Lee Parks is kind of one of my favorites, honestly. Phone ringing.
This is funny. Your phone rang right after my email app made a little ding. So I'm like, okay, yeah. Cool. I guess it's all the notifications are coming in right now.
Yeah, I got to turn this thing. It's on silent mode too. I don't know why. Maybe it's connected because it's connected to the computer or something. Yeah, very maybe. Strange.
Anyway,
okay,
so
that's
some gloves.
My next one.
Yeah.
Now it's your turn.
I am a big fan of training. And I think if you have a motorcyclist in your life, whether they know it or not, they need to get in class and get better at things. So any kind of training, really. A beginner school, an intermediate school, a track day, a race school, whatever. I think it's a great gift, it's not super expensive. There's everything from, around $100 all the way on up to kind of as much as you want to spend, really. So that's my recommendation, is training.
I don't ever feel like there's a situation where you can't benefit by some sort of training, no matter how long you've been riding.
Yeah. And I mean, we could also plug Lee Parks again, because he's one of the gurus of motorcycle training. In fact, there's even a course, I'm going to look it up right now, the name of the guy that does it. But it's called Street Skills. It's an online course. So if your motorcycle in your life can't get to a facility because of COVID, because of whatever, there's even an online course that has exercises you can go practice yourself. And basically you go through an online lecture with some examples and videos and stuff, and then you can go practice those things on your own and then come back to it.
Also specific types of training based on the rider that you're giving the gift to. So if it's somebody who wants to learn dirt, you can go that route, like you said before. Somebody who wants to start racing, that route. And I think training is a really great category for a gift. It's a little bit more pricey, I think, than the normal gift, but I'd be curious to find out how much the online course is.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. So streetskills.net, and it's called Cornering Confidence. Steve, you and I actually have access to this course.
Oh, that's right.
Because the guy that puts it on or whatever, listens to the show. And it's funny. John Delvecchio is his name. He's a motorcycle coach. And he put together this online training, and the course. So there's basically different levels, but the most expensive, it seems, version is $200. It's got an online course plus a book, and there's a personalized sort of thing with John. I don't know exactly how that works.
I actually need to take this class.
But yeah, I started it right when he first sent us the link to it. I started it, and I do a lot of online trainings like this at work. And so I had a hard time getting myself to do it. And it sends you emails if you don't do it. And I every time I get the email, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back and look at it. Cause it's good stuff. Like the videos are well produced. The information is good. You know, it's a really good course. If you can get the online course by itself for $50, and it, like I said, it gives you videos and, you know, diagrams, whatever, and then it also gives you, okay, cool, this is that lesson. Now go practice this on, you know, on your bike in a parking lot, on the road, whatever, and then come back. So that's my recommendation. If you're wanting to sort of stay isolated, not be in class settings with a bunch of people who might, you know, give you a virus that might put you in the hospital or, you know, eliminate your sense of smell or whatever.
Yeah, no. Okay, so my next recommendations are going to be based around food and cooking because
fair point. I like food. I like it.
And I like to eat. So the first one, which is a really, really inexpensive gift, is a book by a friend of ours named Lisa Thomas called Dirty Dining.
Yeah, that's a good one. I have it. I still need to cook some of the stuff out of it. I got a signed one.
I've actually cooked a bunch of the recipes on it, and we took the book with us on our trip. And they're really easy. There's a lot of really good recommendations in there. The full name of it is Dirty Dining, an Adventurer's Cookbook. And you can get it on Amazon, and it's like $25. The Target online sells it. A bunch of different places have it. But
so these two, Lisa is the female half of To Ride the World. And it's Simon and Lisa Thomas. They're a couple of Brits who have been riding around the world on GSs for, I don't know, forever now. It has to have been for a really long time, considering the first time we met, they had already been going for, I think, 5 or 6 years, and it's been, I guess, 10 years since then. So,
yeah. And they've been doing it for a really long time. And one of the things that they always talk about is that they try not to go to restaurants. They don't buy prepared foods. Their big thing is it's really easy to cook a good meal and use local food. So how they do things is they kind of go to like a local market first and see what's available. So let's just say fish is available. Mm-hmm. Then they'll base their meal on whatever fish is available. And the recipes they're all designed for one pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one thing I can tell you, which I'll make another recommendation in a minute on cooking gear, is what they use for a stove, because I can tell you that Chris and I have been through the gamut of stoves and like trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And a lot of it depends on where you're going to be riding and what you have access to. So for those that are going to be like really remote and don't have access to like regular stores to buy camp fuel, you want something that uses like kerosene or white gas or gasoline. And there are stoves out there for that.
Mm-hmm. I have one of those.
There's a stove that MSR makes called the International that can do pretty much anything.
Yep. That's the one I have. The Whisperlite International.
Yeah.
And you and I have both noticed that's the one you don't have a lot of control of the heat with that one. So if you're doing something that does require a little bit of a finesse, you pretty much have roaring inferno and off. You really got to be
So they do make, and the recommendation, and besides the cookbook, I'll make a recommendation now on a stove, is MSR makes a stove called the Dragonfly, which is designed to be able to simmer. It's got really precise flame control, and it also has built-in pot stability because it's got these kind of, instead of the small little arms that fold out, it's got these large wire arms that fold over. They're all, you know, the price ranges on gas stoves can run anywhere from like $50 to $300, depending on what you buy. But the Dragonfly is right in the middle in the low 100s, like 129, 139. The International, they're right around 100. I've seen them for 75. There's also one that they make that's kind of cool. It's called a WinPro that uses, it's either or on the gas. It'll either use the liquid or the vapor on the gas, which are pretty neat too. There's some really cool stuff that's out there. Jepwell makes a lot of really good products, but if you need flame control, the only one I've actually found is a Dragonfly.
Yeah.
And that uses liquid fuel. So you have a canister that you pump up. The cool thing about it is you can use white gas or you can use gasoline. There's a in the kit comes some different, or kerosene, some different types of nozzles for the fuel. But that's the other one. And then I got like a couple more that are cooking related too, but we can get back to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was going to kind of follow the cooking thing. You and I have tested a stove from a company called 180 Tac. And they have a line of, basically like flat packable stoves that are, I mean, this thing is like $37 or $38 for like the cheapest model. And it's basically like some pieces of stainless steel that are all kind of like bent into a shape that when you pop them apart, they pack very flat in like a thin little envelope kind of shape. And then you pull them out and they make a little, like a very small, like backpacking stove. So if you're trying to pack super light, it's a pretty solid option for just, a thing that if you're going to burn wood or coals or whatever under it to heat up some food, so a pot or whatever.
We both tried it and they work really well. You can actually use fuel pellets with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, if it burns under it, you can use it.
So I'm going to go another one on the flat type of grills. There's a company out called UCO. They've been around a long time. They started out, I believe, making emergency candles, that these little lanterns that have a candle in it. Mm-hmm. You would see these things all over the place. I also think that the same company owns Esbit, which makes, I have one of their alcohol fueled stoves, mm-hmm. and they own Mora Knife, which is a Swedish or Finnish knife that are really inexpensive and are fantastic. But they make a stove called the flat. These things are all called flat pack, the flat pack grill and fire pit.
Oh yeah. I'm looking it up right now too.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It packs flat as well. It's kind of a V-shaped, wedge-shaped type of grill.
Yeah, like it's got like little legs that it kind of makes an X if you look at it from the side, that like the top is the stove and the bottom is the legs.
Yep. And the thing about this is now there's a grill on top. You can grill on it. They make two sizes. They make a mini and a regular size. I actually ordered one of these to test it out and see how it is, just so I always had an option to grill something. I have, and I've carried it with me, but I've never used it, one of these portable grills that literally goes into a tube. So you open the tube up, mm-hmm. and then it's got these wire pieces you kind of put in holes on the side and make a grill that is designed to go over a fire. But I like this better because it kind of contains the wood.
Yeah. Because the wood sits in the little crotch of that V, and then you could kind of take it anywhere. Like you don't need to like set it in a fire, or anything like that.
Yeah, you can. It looks like you can put it on the ground. I mean, I'll find out when I get it, but I see pictures of people using it in the sand and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's perfect size for two people. The mini is a good size for one person, but it comes with a case that's like a canvas with a little leather patch on it. It packs flat, so it's easy to pack inside of a gear bag or a box on a motorcycle, not taking up a whole lot of room. There's a And I ended up finding the full size one on Amazon for, I think, $29. They're pretty inexpensive. These are really inexpensive gifts and they're really useful. The other one is another type of a flat pack grill from a company called Otzi, OTZI, and it's OTZIgear.com, OTZIgear.com. And they make this thing called the Spark flat pack grill. And what's interesting about this particular grill is,
oh, I see it.
Thing we've been talking about in the 180, where everything kind of packs flat, it comes apart and packs flat. The difference of this is it's got height adjustment, which I've never seen before, which is really interesting. And it comes with both a grilling surface and a griddle surface.
Yeah.
And it comes with like a skewer to make like shish kebab. But I can tell you this thing is small. It looks like it's really designed for one person. There's like a video in the beginning with a guy grilling a pork chop. Maybe you could get two pork chops on there.
Yeah. It looks like a picture of, like, I see a picture of like either a bone in pork chop or a steak with like a small little coffee pot looking thing sitting next to it.
Yeah.
It looks like you could get two. If you got a big steak, you could only get the one on there, I think.
Yeah. But again, this is, we found it on sale. I think retail price on this thing is like $80, right? Is that what they've got it at?
Yeah.
$39.99. Yeah. That's what we ended up buying. We bought it for $39.
Yeah. And it's, and it looks like when you burn anything that burns in it. So.
Yeah. So a lot of these things, you know,
gets like, when you're sick of your neighbor, you can just hack them up and burn them in your little grill.
Burn them in the grill. And they,
one
you know,
little piece at a time.
Tasty flavor to your food too. But we bought both of these. So we're going to try them out and we'll kind of report back and tell you what they're like. Because like I said, I always wanted to have an option. If we went out, grabbed some meat or something and wanted to grill it, there's really no way right now, whether I'm on a motorcycle or camping, to grill something. Unless you're using the crappy grill at the camp that you're at, you know?
Yeah, which may or may not be worth it.
So the last one I'm going to give you in this same vein is, so a lot of places we've been camping at, they may or may not have a fire ring. And, you know, I know out west it's a huge problem right now, mm-hmm. where there's, you can't burn anything usually.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you have any type of fire ring or a stove or something like that. But on the East Coast here, especially in Florida, everything's always wet. Everything's always damp. And we've noticed too that, and sometimes in established campgrounds, you can't move the fire rings. They're, right. they're set at a place and that's what you got to deal with. And they're usually just a metal steel ring in the ground, you know, like a cut down tube or a tire ring. And they're not real efficient and sometimes they're too big, you know, but there's a company out called Solo Stove that makes a very innovative air induction type system where there's holes around the bottom of the stove. It's double walled.
Oh yeah. I've seen these.
Yeah. And they make these huge fire pits. Like I've seen videos with people having these things on their, you know, on their patio. They make a thing called a bonfire, is the one that I've always seen.
Yeah, they make the one that basically, it's, if you've ever seen anybody that turns like a dryer or a washer drum into a fire pit, they're about that size. Like,
yeah. Well, you know, these were always not practical for putting them on a motorcycle even for car camping or RV camping. So now they've come out with camp stoves and they make three sizes of it. The smallest size, the light, is perfect for a motorcycle. Actually the second one too, the Titan, is perfect. So if you just want to burn a little bit of wood that's laying around your camp, and these are very efficient, they burn the wood completely to nothing but ash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a riser on it where you can put a pot. They make little pots and stuff, or coffee pots for it. They're on sale right now. Obviously Black Friday. Normally the light runs about $90, but they have all kinds of kits where you can buy everything. What we ended up doing was I bought the one called the Campfire, which is a little bit bigger. It's a little bit too big for a motorcycle, I would think. It's designed for four people to get heat. Like, so four people can sit around it,
mm-hmm.
and get heat off of it. And then there's like a pot set you can get, so you can actually cook off of it too, with a little tripod and a chain. It's pretty innovative. But for a motorcycle, honestly, I think the Light or the Titan would be perfectly fine. And they have some pretty cool kits. Like a light gear kit comes with, you know, a coffee pot, a windscreen, a fire starter, some kindling, an option for an alcohol stove, you know, the little mm-hmm. container to put alcohol in.
Yeah.
And they're usually, when they run these on sale, they run about $140 for that kit, which is not bad.
I think it's funny, you and I, we're talking about camping and we're talking about warm things as if it's like winter or something. And you're in Florida and I'm in San Diego. Like,
yeah, but I just got back from places where I'm thinking stuff. Yeah, if it's 60 degrees, I got a parka on.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
that's freezing for a Floridian. When I know, like, my buddy from Alaska is like, yeah, I was out chopping wood in my t-shirt. I'm like, how cold was it? He's like, oh, 20 below, but it's dry. And, you know, you're working up a sweat. I'm like, 20 below? What? I would die. That's like a popsicle for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what you're used to, you know? I mean, I know people that sleep fine in weather that's like 45 degrees. You know, I got the windows open. It's really nice. That buddy of mine who lives in Alaska, when he puts the heat on in his house, and I get it, it's relative, you know, like if it's one temperature outside, a 20 degree increase inside is big. So he's like, yeah, I never have the house any warmer than 50 degrees.
Yeah.
But for me, like, it's nice if I'm camping someplace. When I'm on a motorcycle trip, I'd love to have a campfire every night, honest to God.
Yeah, me too.
To me, that's the best thing. Yeah.
Make some chili mag.
This gives you a way to have a campfire whenever there's not an option. There's no fire ring. You can contain this safely. It's very efficient. And if you just have a little bit of kindling with you, and Spencer taught me a really cool thing to make kindling. It was basically dryer lint, some golf wax, and he does it like in the egg carton. So each little cup makes like, And I've seen him done with toilet paper rolls too, you know. But you can usually find enough firewood for these small stoves just by walking around your campsite.
Yeah,
I mean, broken branches.
Yeah, like little, because you're using little chips of stuff, really.
Yeah. If you were to go buy firewood, you'd want to be able to break it down with an axe or something.
Yeah, because you're not even going to fit a single, like, whole log in there.
No, not at all. Not in these things. But what's nice about it is you can usually find stuff around the campsite to burn. And there's always the alcohol burner option, too, that if you wanted to buy that. I personally just like doing the wood thing. But having heat, you know, and some light and the ambiance is really great. So that's my next thing, whether it's one of these. The grills you can do for the same thing with. You can make a little campfire and not cook anything on it.
Yeah.
You've got these options. Now, the solo stove is going to pack a little bit differently because it is round. Everything kind of fits inside. But because it's hollow on the inside, you could pack other stuff in it.
Yeah, it's kind of got that like jet boil shape. You know, it's not the same as a jet boil really in any way, but like the shape is the same, like a round little cylinder that's going to hang out in your bag somewhere, which, you know, given some of the nature of some of the shapes of other things that you use camping, round isn't bad. There's a lot of round things. And so like having a place to stuff other little stuff inside would be cool.
It definitely is not hard to pack something like this on a motorcycle. The flat's better. There's no doubt about it, but this is good too.
Yeah. I'm going to jump up a bit in price. We're still some outdoors woodsy stuff. I feel like every motorcyclist and or potential motorcyclist or maybe every human needs a Honda Trail 125. Nice little stocking stuffer.
I would be really happy if you got that for me for Christmas.
Right?
Right.
They just if you follow Asphalt and Rubber, that's how I found out about it. They did the sort of Honda did their release of the bike, their little press get together and ride about 45 minutes from my house. And I was so jealous. I wanted to go drive them all off the road and steal one. Honda has done a couple of their motorcycle releases here in San Diego, and it just makes me so happy and mad. Like, I want to be there so bad. But yeah, so the Honda Trail 125 is definitely very high on my list of things I would like for Christmas, and also high on the list of things I'm not going to get for Christmas.
I would buy you one if money were no object.
Thanks.
I would actually bring it out to you. How's that?
That'd be great. If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. It's something I heard a very long time ago.
That's classic.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one is now you made me lose my train of thought because I was laughing so hard from that stupidity of yours. I can't even. Yes. So where was I now? You got to give you your next one. Well, I try to remember what I've got it written down here and I can't find it.
I'm trying to think of something else that I like for a motorcycle gift other than things to burn stuff. And motorcycles and training. I'm kind of stumped too. That was kind of my last one was the stocking stuffer Honda 125.
I I'm sure I have one more that I do have it. I just can't remember what it is because I had it written down and I can't find the paper and I had a tab open on my browser to look at it. And then I looked at something else and now it says COSO there and I'm trying to hit the back button and I don't see it because I'm old and pretty disabled, but I think we gave a pretty good list for right now.
Yeah.
A lot of food related and cooking and heat related stuff. But, the other thing would be too, one that I think is always a good gift and it's easy are undergarments.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like, you know, fishnet underwear. I'm talking about, specific stuff like wool or a high performance undergarment. So if you've got a rider in your life that's always complaining about either being cold or being uncomfortable, you know, a good set of undergarments for riding is always makes the trip more enjoyable. And we both of us have learned that the hard way too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this, I'm sure it, you know, by the time you listen to this, a lot of sales will have, you know, been over whatever, because this, we're recording this on the Sunday after Black Friday, but, I just bought a pair of like smart wool, like leggings. So, you know, like basically like the under, you know, smart wool, like underwear, like long underwear. I haven't had a chance to test them out yet, but, they feel super comfortable. And I know that smart wool is like a really good product, like, you know, all merino wool kind of situation. Moto Skivvies has been, you know, long time friends and supporters of the show. They make a really nice product for giving you some extra comfort and support while you're riding, and they make different versions depending on the position that you ride in. So the sort of inner pad is shaped differently if you've got a sport bike or a cruiser or an adventure bike or whatever. So those are my two recommendations: smart wool and Moto Skivvies.
What's the difference between smart wool and regular wool?
They fed the sheep with a diet of smart water. the brand, it's just a brand. They make a lot of obviously wool products though. So like, I have like a sweater from them that's, you know, like comfy and, you know, nice looking, whatever, pair of like gloves that I bought. And then I have the long johns. There was a little while when like all outdoor gear was like 30% off at REI, and I realized that I was going to be going to Japan in February, and Japan is cold, so I need, and I live in San Diego, I don't have anything for cold weather, so I bought a couple of things to help me not be a frozen popsicle in Japan when I go in January or in February.
I never really think about Japan as having really cold weather either, you know?
Yeah, I don't think about what Japan's weather is like. And then like you see pictures of Mount Fuji and the thing's always covered in snow. And
right.
It's like, wait a minute. We're going in February. It's cold out there. It's not, you know, crazy cold. It's not negative 20, but it's cold compared to San Diego. So I got a few things.
Of all the undergarments that I've ever purchased or used, the wool's always been the best for me because if you don't really know the way wool works, cotton's like horrible because if it's cold out and you sweat, cotton gets wet and it no longer insulates. And now you're cold and wet. Whereas wool, it doesn't matter if you sweat or not, you're always going to stay warm. And merino wool is like you said, REI. I've got it at REI, at Cabela's. You know, I have some of the name brand undergarments that come from some of the companies that we have like jackets and pants from, but they never perform as well as wool does for me, especially when it comes to things like socks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good gift idea for somebody.
The thing about wool, like there's different weights of wool and, you know, and of garments. So like you can get wool gear that is designed to cool you and wool gear that is designed to keep you hot. It's just a fabric like any other. And you know, if you're looking for if you're like looking for a natural fiber that you can use, you don't want to use a bunch of synthetic stuff, then wool's a really good option.
There's the synthetic stuff that's out there too is phase change material, but it's typically a lot more expensive than wool is.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well. I've tried it. I have one piece, a top piece undergarment that's made out of phase change. So when you're hot, it keeps you cool. When you're cold, it keeps you warm. I don't know how it performs when it's wet though. Like that's something I've never tested, but it's, works well. Otherwise it's just kind of pricey. Whereas wool, you can find pretty decent price a lot.
Yeah. One last thing. If you want to document your journeys and that sort of thing, DJI, the company that makes, you know, a million different kinds of drones, not that long ago, they released the DJI Mini 2, which is a under 250 gram little drone that you can fly around and take cool aerial photos of your motorcycle buddies and all that sort of stuff. And the Mini 2 is the upgraded version of the Mavic Mini. And so the Mavic Mini is now discounted. You can get a Mavic Mini for like $350. It's not cheap, but it's one of the best entry level drones if you're looking to take, you know, some pictures from angles you couldn't normally get. You know, like even if you're out with your buddies and you want to get a picture from like, oh, we'd like a picture of all of us on this cool road or this cool view that we found, but there's nobody else here to take a picture. Like you can go set the drone, like fly the drone out a little bit, spin it around and point it at you, you know, and take a photo. And they've got built in, like AI is not the right word, but sort of like pre-programmed modes that it will take photo or video, on a pattern. So like you can, they call it like a droney with like a selfie, but with the drone. So it'll automatically fly out a certain distance, spin around, look at you, take a photo, or take video. They have like a high speed ascent. So like if you want one of those like photos that looks like the drone, like the camera like pulls out really fast, you can just, you know, say, okay, do that. And I think it uses like a timer, it counts down a timer and then just shoots up into the air while pointing at you, you know, wherever you have the remote at or whatever. So it has a lot
have
of cool
you
little
used
features
one of these
like that.
Before?
No, when I did my motorcycle relief project ride, one of the guys that rode with us had one. Not the Mini, he had a big one. But I'm actually strongly considering getting the Mini or the Mini 2.
I'm looking. So the Mavic soon. Mini now is running $359.
Yeah, yeah. And that one, the $49. Yeah, the Mini 2 is like $500 and has some pretty decent upgrades. But if you're just getting into it and you want, you know, sort of like an entry level that has really good features, the Mavic Mini is a great, like not super crazy expensive option. And it's small enough that it folds up and is a little bit bigger than the palm of your hand. And because it's under 250 grams, you don't require any courses or license from the FAA to use it.
Which is really a big deal because,
How many notification sounds can your phone make? Yeah, you held the button down long enough to make it like emergency call. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have a Mavic Pro, like the older one.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a commercial drone pilot's license, but I've never really, I don't use it for anything like that. I got it because of my job, because, we started a drone program, which we haven't really done anything with yet, but, I've used mine, but I've never tried any of those settings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the follow me or the droney or any of that stuff. And I'm going to start practicing with it because there's nothing wrong with the one I have. It shoots some really great video and the pictures are really nice. I just found that to figure out how to do that stuff and kind of watch the drone at the same time and pay attention to what I'm doing, I really need somebody kind of spotting me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much people know about what that's why I like the Mini 2, because of the weight and you eliminate all these other things you need to worry about. But you really always, just a pro tip, you should have a spotter, somebody that's watching the drone at all times. It's an FAA requirement for regular drones, even recreational drones, that to have a two-person team. But this little one, man, it looks really cool. Like this thing is tiny, you know?
Yeah.
The technology, if they're packing all the same technology into this little Mini 2, that's a pretty worthwhile thing to have, because I'm sure now the camera's even better than the one I have, you know.
This is pretty cool. The Mini 2 shoots 4K video, if that's something you want. The Mini shoots 2.7K, so it's still better than a 1080p resolution photo image. They make big ones and make, you know, super crazy fancy ones. But like I said, if you're looking for like an entry level, the thing that's kind of one of the things that the confluence of things that have gotten me thinking about this is like, I've been taking a lot of photos lately. And then my son is also like really interested in, you know, drones and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so he's been asking for a drone of some kind for Christmas. I am not getting him a DJI Mavic Mini for Christmas. He's nine. I'm not going to get a $350 camera drone for a 9 year old, but, I may get a $350 camera drone for a 35 year old and, let him fly it sometimes.
They make a small thing too, right? Like the Tello, do they still make that?
They have the Tello, which is like a educational sort of like helps kids learn basics of programming and that sort of stuff. And DJI also has, if you're looking for, you know, taking motorcycle related video or whatever, they make a bunch of different stabilizer gimbal things you can either mount your phone to, or that have a built-in camera, or if you have a fancy camera, you can attach your fancy camera to it. To help have you like, you know, be able to take like more gimbal stabilized kind of photos or videos as like, you know, if you want to take a video of your buddies riding by on some cool corner and you want it to not have a bunch of shakiness in it, you know, you can use this gimbal device to help stabilize everything.
So they really have added a lot since the last time I looked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so they've got built-in gimbals with cameras built into them. They've got one for your phone, the OM4. They got this thing, Mobile 3. That also is for your phone.
They have one called the Pocket that looks like it's not much bigger than like a couple of pens. If you had like a pack of pens in your hand.
Yeah.
It's just a tiny little gimbal camera that you can take video and stills with. You can literally like stuff it in a pocket. So if you were, you know, wanting to go for a ride and take some random stuff, not that I would endorse this, but you could totally use it while riding a motorcycle. I have several friends that have taken cool photos of me while they were also riding their motorcycle.
Very interesting. And also too, on this, the same thing is, GoPro came out with a new camera too, the Hero 9 that, I saw our buddy Scott from Amen Moto has, and it's, really a very nice camera with mm-hmm. a front facing screen that you can actually watch. Like if you're doing selfies and things like that, or vlogging, you can see what's going on from the front. It's really cool. Yeah. These things are neat. That would be a good idea, especially if you don't know what to get somebody.
Yeah. I'm like I said, right. I'm thinking really strongly about getting a, DJI Mavic Mini or the Mini 2 and just kind of learning how to use it and, you know, that, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I got mine. I bought it from a guy at work, ops, who is, they've got a pretty extensive team for drones. And, one thing I noticed about a lot of these is on the used secondary market that you can get some really good deals.
Oh, sure.
But, I think I paid like $800 for mine with extra batteries and like a fly more kit, extra rotors, like cases for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's does a really great job. It's just a matter of the more you fly it, the more proficient you get at it. And like Spencer really knew, he has a Phantom that we brought on the trip, and he really understood how to set it up really quick and get it into these modes and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instantly we had it like following us down the road, which I thought was pretty cool that he got it done pretty quick, where I'm kind of messing around with the menus and trying to figure things out and never really spent a lot of time playing with it. But that's a good tip. Yeah.
I think that's all I got for random gift stuff.
Yeah. I got something completely off topic.
Yeah, sure.
This is going down the rabbit hole of that podcast that Chuck and Todd listen to? The Archivist?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I don't know anything about this podcast.
It's just got a bunch of weird stuff on it, you know, and they do a Florida episode every year that's pretty hilarious, like talking about all the idiots that live in Florida and the stuff that they do, but completely unrelated to motorcycles or anything else. I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan's podcast.
Okay.
Because he interviews all kinds of different people. Well,
yeah.
I don't even know how I saw this pop up on my feed, but I caught the episode with Commander David Favore. Have you heard this?
No.
So this guy was, what's the Black Aces? VF-43, maybe?
I can look real quick. I'm horrible with knowing anything about fighter squadrons.
But this guy was like the commander of the Black Aces, whoever they were. And I know they're based on
VFA-41.
41. And he's the guy that they were doing a training mission, I guess. And again, completely unrelated to motorcycles. So if you don't want to hear anything about this, like, stop paying attention. Yeah,
feel
now.
Free to tune out. We're probably not going to talk much about motorcycles for the rest of the episode.
No, it's just, I never had seen any of this until I watched this episode. But this is a guy that apparently saw the Tic Tac unidentified flying object.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then you got video of it. The second Marine Corps F-18s that went up shot like video from a targeting pod. It is unbelievably bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, you got to listen to this Joe Rogan episode with Commander David Favore. It's like F-E-V-O-R. Well, that led me into the next thing was a guy named Bob Lazar. Have you heard about this guy? Well, apparently this story broke like in the late 80s in Las Vegas by an investigative reporter. And this guy, Bob Lazar, and this is going to really sound out there.
Okay, really quick. If anybody is still listening and wants to hear about motorcycle stuff, I do have random scooter things to talk about after this.
Okay, we'll talk. It's going to be 2 seconds and I'm done. Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm so freaked out by it. Apparently this guy worked at like S4, which is a place north of Area 51. And claims to have worked on alien technology, like actually worked on the power plant for a spacecraft. If you at all find any of this stuff interesting, check out Joe Rogan and look for Bob Lazar.
All right.
And that's all I got. That's it.
A few weeks ago.
Back to motorcycles.
Yeah, back to, scooters. An electric scooter concept, in fact. A few weeks ago, BMW posted some photos on their Instagram of the definition CE04 electric scooter concept, and the thing looks crazy. They had a person on it that had like a jacket that was built into, or not built into, but linked into the bike that also produced light. The jacket had like piping in it that produced light. Looked super cool. This scooter looks super futuristic. It's like this funky orange and white, definitely looks like it came out of an anime, and I love it.
I hate it.
I thought so.
It is by far the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It's
like the MN4, you know?
It does have a bit of a Honda NM4 feel to it. I'll agree with that.
I remember what my last gift guide thing was now.
Oh, cool. What was your last gift guide thing?
Okay. So there's a company called Break Free Tech that makes a rear mounted smart brake light for your helmet.
Oh, cool.
And my friend Dana had got one of these on their Kickstarter when it started. And I thought it was going to be goofy until I actually saw the thing in use. It's got a gyro in it.
Yeah. Dana's been on the show, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to get her to come on and talk about this thing because she'll like, if something new comes out, man, she's all over it. And she also doesn't cheap out on anything. Like, she's got, all of her helmets are usually awry and they're like limited edition. And she's not under, you know, not about not paying a grand for a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
But she got this thing and she kind of showed me how it attaches. Like, it's not really, it doesn't screw up the helmet at all. but it works fantastic. I don't know, long-term, you know, they're not super expensive. They're about $170, and you can get like different, you can move it from helmet to helmet. They've got like an attachment thing designed that goes on the helmet. But honestly, especially if you're riding in a lot of traffic and you're really worried about somebody seeing your brakes, this thing would be a great idea. And if, you know, as far as like a gift is concerned, this requires a bit of buy-in from the user. So, you know, you're obviously not going to give this to a Harley rider that's wearing like a peanut shell on his head. Mm-hmm. But if you've got somebody that's like an all the gear, all the time person concerned about safety, has put like additional lighting on the back of their bike, this would be a perfect gift.
Cool.
And it's Brake Free Tech, BrakeFreeTech.com.
Nice. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. But getting back to your CEO4 definition.
Yeah. So
what about it do you like? Does it look, because it looks from Space Odyssey 2001.
I like kind of everything. Honestly, I really I like the orange and white, and I like the like very like modern angular look to it. There was the other electric scooter the BMW had like previously, that they've had an electric scooter that people said like was really like performed really well. Like I heard some good things about, like, you know, it's super torquey. Obviously it's an electric motor, but like, you know, super like fun to ride. But this one is lighter and it gets a little bit less. They don't have a ton of specs out on it yet, 'cause it's just a concept. But they're planning on bringing this thing out as like a real scooter. It's expecting it to have like 75 to 80 miles of range, which it's a scooter.
It's kind of grown.
I mean, that seems fine.
It's just kind of growing on me now.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, I'm looking through the pictures and stuff, and the whole concept with the jacket, it seems like the helmet's kind of integrated into the thing too.
Yeah. They have a helmet that's like got the same kind of paint job. And, I don't know who the helmet's made by. I'm going to guess Schuberth, but I don't know.
From the side, this thing looks pretty neat. It's pretty long.
Yeah. And it's got like a big 10.25-inch touch screen, like display up front, that, you know, looks, you know, nice and modern. And, I also think one of the funky things about it is a lot of scooters have their rear wheel like shrouded in some way. You know, 'cause the motor's back there, there's, you know, bodywork around the rear tire. This thing, the tail end, it's got a single sided swing arm, and like kind of a bobbed looking tail section. So it's got like a, now that I think about it, if a Honda Ruckus and Wall-E from the Pixar movie like had a baby, this is probably not too far off from what it would look like.
So they've got a picture on here. It looks like there's a small pillion seat, mm-hmm. like really small.
Yeah.
But they also have a picture of somebody putting the helmet inside of something.
Yeah, there's a compartment, like basically under the rider's butt, is a storage compartment that opens from the side. And you can slide the helmet in or whatever, you know, you're hopefully at least a 12-pack of beer into the little section.
Listen, the whole point of having a scooter, especially this, they're like saying this is for the city, you know, is being able to run errands. And if there's nowhere to put anything on it, it kind of defeats the purpose. So I like the fact that there's some sort of a storage trunk on here.
Yeah. Yeah. They say it's large enough for a full size helmet.
You could put a couple bags of groceries in there, you know? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do they have any idea what this is going to cost? I know it's pretty conceptual right now.
I think I just saw it actually. They're thinking like a 14 grand price point, which is a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're
electric technology really needs to come down in price.
Yeah. I mean, it's working its way down there. Like I feel like the offerings from Zero are fairly on point price wise. Like they're a little more expensive than, like, I think I'm, you know, mentally comparing like the SRF and say like the Yamaha MT-09. And the zero is more expensive. But I think there's valid reason. You know, I think it's justifiable. The bonus things you're getting out of the situation are worth it. And you're paying a little bit of a premium for, you know, new technology, electric
okay, stuff. So to ask a stupid question, because I don't have zero knowledge of this. Mm-hmm. When you charge these things at a charging station, do you pay for that?
Yeah. Yeah. It varies depending on the station. And it's really inexpensive though. I don't know the total cost, but I mean, for example, I was hanging out with a friend of mine who has a Tesla Model 3, and mm-hmm. it was like to charge her Tesla halfway was, I don't know, like $4 or $5 at a Tesla supercharger. And I think at a, you know, a more at a non Tesla charger, I know there's a fee. It's not super expensive. It's definitely cheaper than gas.
So if you hear these little beeping noises, I'm actually trying to register for a zero motorcycle demo.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to wait a minute.
Yeah, there's that. I can't recommend trying either the SRS or the SRF enough. The thing that I'm really, really anxiously waiting for all of the zeros to be on the new traction control system that those two bikes use. Mm-hmm. I took the SRF into a gravel parking lot and tried, not as hard as I could, but I tried to get the rear wheel to like screw me into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it just would not do it. Like it was like I would be in a lean and just whack the throttle open, and I would get maybe like an eighth or a 16th of a wheel spin, and the traction control would be like, nope, we're going to turn that down, and just immediately had traction again and just cruised right on around my little turn.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was
that's right now currently only available in the SRS and the SRF, right?
Yeah. The DSR and the ones that use that generation of technology don't have that at all. They have ABS, but they don't have traction control, which that's fine. Like it's not the end of the world, but I really want an adventure ish, like a dual sport ish, you know, DS quality, like the equivalent of the DSR, but with all the new stuff. So
yeah, these are, I keep looking at Giro. I really like what they make. Too. I like filing on them. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, I think for all of us at some point, electric's going to be like a common, easily attainable option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the Zero, for me right now, the Zero would be, well, honestly, for the amount of riding that I do right now, no motorcycle would be just fine. Which sucks. I hate that. Like I haven't been riding at all. In fact, I might go ride some today. but when I'm riding, the kind of riding I do most of the time, an electric bike would be perfect. Like going to work and stuff. We have an electric charging point on the base, and so like I could, if I actually needed a charge, I could stop there, charge the bike up, and just walk the rest of the way to work. Or, you know, whatever, no, not a big deal.
I've noticed they're all over Walmarts now. I pulled into actually it wasn't even a Walmart. It was like a mall parking lot, mm-hmm. and there were like 10 Tesla charging stations.
Yeah.
Can you use those for something like this?
I'm not sure about Tesla stations and non-Tesla vehicles. I know that you can use all the other stations on a Tesla, so maybe. I'm just not really sure. I know, because like the plug has the plug that Teslas use, which is a very common plug that, you know, a lot of people are using, has two DC charging pins on the bottom, and then an AC charging pin setup that's in like a circle on the top. And mm-hmm. I know that the way Tesla superchargers work, they're using DC fast charging. And so they're using those DC pins. I'm not sure if, I don't know if you can use that kind of charging on a Zero, in order to be able to plug the, you know, the Tesla's charger into the Zero or what. I'm not super sure.
You'd think that they'd make it kind of standard.
As far as I know, it is fairly standard. I'm not sure exactly, like, you know, level two, level three, you know, what, you know, with what the different,
right.
You know,
standards are. But you can plug these into 110 as well, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can even use like, so Zero sells accessory chargers, and so that you can actually charge, you can like add chargers, like say you're at home and you don't have a 220 outlet that you want to use, that you're going to use to charge your Zero faster. You can actually use accessory chargers to plug your house into more than your bike into more than one electrical outlet at a time. And charge each of the individual batteries in the Zero, the battery packs, like separately. So they charge up faster than, you know, a single charger charging all of them.
Yeah, I'm looking at all their accessories and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot.
They
of
also
stuff.
Make like additional, like a tank battery type of thing, right? Like a bigger.
Yeah, it's called, they have a thing called the charge tank, which allows faster charging, and then they have the power tank, which is just another battery.
Okay.
I don't know what those options. I know those are options for the DS. Because that's the one that I stare at constantly is the Zero DSR.
Yeah, the DSR is pretty cool.
Yeah, and speaking of electric bikes, go ahead.
The DSR BF.
Oh yeah, the Black Force edition with the bags and everything. Yeah, I like that one a lot. I don't have a ton to say about this, so we might as well just tack it on to the end of an episode. I watched all of The Long Way Up.
I haven't seen all of it yet, but just what Revian did was pretty incredible.
I agree. It was impressive. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed watching Charlie and Ewan interact and do stuff. The beginning of the trip seemed a lot more tense with like making it where they needed to for charging and that sort of stuff. And what really seemed to happen is once they got out of the like super frozen temperatures of the southern tip of Argentina, the bike's range increased a lot and they were back to being able to kind of like basically film it as if they were riding gasoline motorcycles. They weren't stressing over charging so much anymore. The Harleys grew on me. I don't like them very much. But honestly, even the sound of them wasn't offensive to me. I think it's kind of silly that they have to make a sound at all, but,
I understand why though.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. You really want to hear something coming, and I don't know if this is something that I dreamt up or I read, but I think somebody was hit by an electric vehicle in an intersection because they didn't hear it coming.
Yeah. I've heard of stuff like that happening too. Yeah. But I liked watching it. It was fun. I was a little bit, I was a little sad when it ended, like just cause I was like, oh, I kind of want just to keep going. I'm really enjoying this. And I've binge watched it very quickly.
I got to go finish it. You know, everything that they do, though, it gives you that feeling to me.
Yeah, it made me want to get out riding.
Yeah.
Yeah, the team and this particular one, I feel like the guys, the rest of the team was a lot more visible and present and active in the like on camera and like Russ and the other guy. Yeah, Dave and Russ. Yeah. Dave and Russ were like on camera almost as much as Charlie and Ewan, I think. And I really enjoyed that. Like, cause you know, they were driving these prototype, you know, electric pickup trucks and having their own adventure, even when Charlie and Ewan weren't around. The funny thing is, so Claudio came up as a suggested friend on Facebook the other day. And
really?
Yeah, he's popped up before. And I was like, I didn't recognize him the first time. I was like, who is this guy? And then I've been watching the show and then he came up as a suggested friend on Facebook because he and I have a bunch of friends in common, I guess, on Facebook anyway, probably not real actual friends, but, you know, Facebook friends. And I was like, oh, it's Claudio, the cameraman from all of the Long Way Up, Round and Down, you know, things. I was like, that's who that guy is.
Did you add him?
I requested him. He didn't, I don't think he's responded, but
yeah.
Because like I said, I've seen him pop up before and I was like, who is this dude? Because it had been so long since I saw one. So I didn't think about like, you know, his face didn't look familiar to me.
Dude, I get that all the time. Like people, I don't know who the hell they are. I kind of look at the mutual friends list to figure out, oh, okay.
Yeah. He's not on a motorcycle in his photos. Like he's in like a bush, like a plant. And his cover photo is not motorcycle related at all either. And so I'm like, who is this dude? And then, you know, like I said, I was watching the show and I'm like, that's who that is. Finally, I figured it out.
Right. Right. Yeah. Pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
The whole algorithm thing at like between Facebook and Instagram, and literally, we've talked about something. I've told you this before.
Oh, yeah.
Not Google searched it or anything. The next thing you know, it's coming up in my feed.
Yeah. I think that even if they're not actually listening, which I'm not convinced that they are, like, they've gotten such a good pattern of everybody's behavior because, you know, like you and I don't have the brain capacity to remember every decision we've ever made, but an algorithm that pays attention to the amount of time we spend on a certain page or, you know, what links we click or what search terms we enter has a full and unforgotten record of all of those decisions and can produce such a very good prediction model of what the next thing we're going to do is.
Yeah, but what about random stuff that you don't really like? I told you we tested this thing by talking about like a panini maker we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I never looked, and it just all of a sudden it's 100%. Look, if it wakes up when you say a name like, yeah, hey Siri or Alexa, that it's listening.
Right. Yeah.
Which kind of pisses me off a little bit, but you know, I mean, I could turn it off.
It's an option.
Yeah. Which I haven't done. So I'm the idiot, you know?
Yeah. There's a documentary on Netflix called The Social Dilemma that I keep wanting to watch.
I need to watch it too.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that's about all we got. We got some gift stuff out. We had some random non-motorcycle talk of both the van life and conspiracy theory things. So like, if you want to eat a lot of granola and do hippie things, listen to the beginning. If you want to talk about aliens and Joe Rogan and conspiracies. There's
not a freaking hippie thing about living in a van, damn it.
So yeah, I think we covered a lot of bases today. Probably one afternoon.
I remembered another recommendation, but I'm going to save it for the next show.
Okay, cool. Well,
right.
Get out and ride.
See ya.